92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show. Today's special guest host is Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian.
What's up, Memphis? It's not Gary Parish, it's Drew Hill, but I'm joining you for 2 hours today. We have a whole lot to talk about. We promised some Grizzlies talk. We will deliver some Grizzlies talk here. We're going to talk about some of the biggest storylines for this upcoming season. In the first segment, four stories at 444. Aaron Judge got to number 60, as Bennett predicted. The trade-off?
Cash it.
For the number 60 ball? Not too good. We'll talk about that at 4 Stories at 444. At 5 o'clock, we're going to talk to Jeff Calkins, as always. We'll do a little bit more Grizzlies talk with him.
Got the Memphis basketball schedule.
We do have a Memphis basketball schedule now.
And we got some Tiger football scheduling news as well today we got to get to.
Yeah, all kinds of scheduling stuff going on. We'll talk about Grizzlies schedule, too, a little bit here in a second. But anyway, then we'll do dinner to go. We'll get out of here. But I wanted to start with the Memphis Grizzlies because Media Day is on Monday. I am very much looking forward to it. It feels like it's been too long since we've had a chance to talk with some of the Grizzlies players. I'm imagining we'll probably get at least some sort of update on Jaren's status and where he stands from the Grizzlies brass on Monday. So it should be a pretty eventful day over there at FedEx Forum. We put together a list here, Bennett, of things we view as some of the biggest storylines heading into this coming season.
Top five storylines heading into training camp.
Things that will surely get asked about on Monday when everybody gets the chance to talk to the Memphis Grizzlies. Where do we start?
You want me to read these? I'll fire them off.
You can fire them at me and I'll answer. That works.
So our Grizzlies top five storylines heading into training camp. Number one, the wing position, specifically surrounding Dylan Brooks and Zaire Williams. A lot of chatter about both players today.
Little Twitter trash talk going on. Twitter talk out there in the universe. To me, this is maybe the number one thing, right? This is where you've experienced the most change from a season ago. We'll get into the Jaren stuff. Obviously, there's big question marks there, but you expect that he'll be back eventually. Kyle Anderson, DeAnthony Melton, they're not going to be back on this team this year. So, and what I guess concerns me a lot, a topic that I don't think is really being discussed, because while they were both very good players, they weren't really the stars of the team in any way, is just how good those guys were defensively and how well they made the Grizzlies the Memphis Grizzlies. I'll explain. The style of the Memphis Grizzlies, the thing that everybody thinks about when they watch the Grizzlies, the thing that has made them the darling of the NBA the last couple season, are those electric highlight plays. And while Ja is responsible for a ton of those highlight plays, they start by their ability to get in transition. Scored the fourth most points in the league last year off of turnovers, one of the fastest-paced teams in the entire league, and league leaders in those alley-oop, running alley-oop plays. You know where those begin? Somebody swiping at the ball and getting in transition and scoring in a quick way. Jaren was obviously great at knocking the ball out, but nobody on the wing did that better than DeAnthony Melton and Kyle Anderson. And you have lost a big chunk of your defense. You have lost a big chunk of your identity, your ability to get to those plays. And you're going to now be replacing them with players that everybody thinks are going to be good defensively. Like, I think John Conchar has a chance to play more minutes now. And shout out to Jiddy for getting the Nike deal done.
I saw that yesterday. Nick Napolo put that out.
The Air Conch ones coming soon. he will have a big opportunity this year. And Dylan is a good defender. And Zaire has size and quickness to become a good defender. But you're definitely losing something in Kyle and in DeAnthony, and you're losing a two big pieces that made you the type of team that, that you became last year and part of the reason why the team was so exciting. So this is a major question for me. Like, I want to know how these guys are going to get used. I think based on the way that they played Zaire Williams in summer league, it suggests that they think he can play more of the two. Like, he can be a shooting guard. I don't hate that idea. I think that's a pretty good idea based on his current skill set. And there's no question in my mind, if Dez or Dylan are to get hurt, there's a chance, it's certain that Zaire Williams will end up starting games this year.
Yep.
Also, when I asked Dave McClure, Grizzlies assistant coach at Summer League, about Zaire's development and what opportunities in front of him, he was not willing to rule out the idea that Zaire could just start to begin the season. And there's questions to be had about that.
Interesting.
Do you think Dylan Brooks is a better fit off the bench? Do you think Dylan Brooks would be willing to accept a role off the bench?
No.
Probably not, right?
No.
Dylan's going into a contract year this year.
No.
There's players that
I do not think that will go over well. I'm just being honest.
Right.
And I don't think Dylan should come off the bench.
I don't think so either.
Uh-uh.
But I'm just saying, I don't think that they have ruled out completely that Zaire will be a starter. I think there's a chance going into camp, if he can impress enough, that they're not going to tell him on day one of training camp, Zaire,
you're coming off the bench. Right.
I don't think that it doesn't benefit anybody.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Konjar too. Like, he's clearly a guy that they expect to like contribute pretty big this season. Evidence being they paid him in the offseason, right?
$19 million.
Yeah. So he's going to be a big part of what they do. Yeah,
that's not a small. I mean, it's in the big picture, it's a small deal, but I think it's pretty significant in how they feel about him going forward. And the other, you said Dylan would not accept a role off the bench. I think the other interesting thing to watch here is, as you're going into the beginning of this training camp, you still got some time to try to get extensions done for some players. Mm-hmm. And Dylan is one of those players that when Chris Harrington and I were podcasting about this earlier in the summer, you would talk about, if the Grizzlies were smart, they'd try to get him signed now because you can get a good deal. I think Dylan's ready to bet on himself. I get that sense.
Yep. Like,
and it's going to be harder to bet on yourself if you're coming off the bench for the Grizzlies. And he's been really committed to the Grizzlies this summer. He had a chance to go work out with Team Canada. He stayed so that he could be, working out with the Grizzlies staff.
Yeah, I forgot about that little controversy over the summer.
Yeah,
So,
I mean, I think that the Grizzlies definitely still feel good about Dylan Brooks and, where he's going. But it'll be interesting to see how they deploy him and Zaire. You would expect that he'll start. Zaire will come off the bench. I don't think there's any doubt Dez and Ja will both start. So those guys are going to be interesting to watch. And they, as we mentioned before, they definitely lost some steals and rebounding, by the way.
Yeah.
DeAnthony Melton and Kyle Anderson were both very good rebounders for their position. So all those transition points are harder to come by now without those guys around.
All right, number two of the Grizzlies' top five storylines heading into training camp, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s status and the four position.
Yeah, we're going to get into people we think are going to emerge, but I am a little bit less pessimistic about Jaren's status than others. I think I've said this on the show.
He's been sending out some cryptic tweets recently.
Yeah,
I don't know how you want to take them, but it seemed positive to me.
The Grizzlies said 4 to 6 months, right?
Yep.
When this injury first happened. And if you were really looking at that timeline, that suggested that it's probably going to be November or maybe early December. If on the quick end of that, it could be as early as October, right? I don't think that there's any doubt that he'll probably miss games, but I'm not one of the people that is going to say, because of the way that the Grizzlies have handled injuries in the past, that they're going to just, I mean, of course they'll be careful, but they're going to hold him out until like January. I just don't think that that makes a ton of sense for the Grizzlies. And the schedule here is also something to take into consideration as it relates to the Jaren injury. If Jaren were to return, let's say at Thanksgiving or sometime like right around Thanksgiving, He's probably going to play six games, in my opinion, against some of these like playoff competitor teams. The Mavs, the Nets twice, the Celtics, the Timberwolves, and the Pelicans. If he's not back until after Christmas into the new year, it's 14 teams. Like, the schedule gets a lot tougher in between November and Christmas. You've got the in addition to the six games I just named, you also have the Pelicans, the Wolves, the 76ers, the Heat, the Bucks, the Nuggets, the Suns, and the Warriors, all leading up until Christmas, in between Thanksgiving and Christmas. You want him back for that stretch. Mm-hmm. That's an important stretch. So I think if you're the Grizzlies, you're hoping you can get him back in sometime in November. Now, this is just all it's speculation, right? We'll probably get some sort of update from the Grizzlies on Monday. It may be significant. It may be not. They haven't said a word about it. But I think all in all, you feel good about it if things remain on the same timeline that they released right away. You can feel good about it. I think where you're anxious is just, what is Jaren going to look like when he comes back? Is he going to be the dominant defensive player that he was a year ago? If he is, they should be fine. Like, they should be able to survive this at the beginning of the season, still be in contention at the end, and Jaren should have plenty of time to get his feet under him and be ready by playoff time. But if it's not the same Jaren, and he looks a step slower because of the injury, and you've already given him this big contract, I think there's a little bit of reason for concern. But all in all, I think you feel okay about that situation if you're the Grizzlies. Obviously, it could be better, but it could also be a lot worse.
All right, number three storyline heading into training camp, the Western Conference and how it's going to play out this season. Like, we talked about it before the show. I mean, I think the Grizzlies are still clearly a team that is not going to be playing for a play-in spot. I think they're a solid playoff team. I don't think they're going to be the two seed again, but I think they're going to be right there in the mix again.
You know, there's not a lot of room for error between that two seed and the six spot.
I know there's not.
You have to think that the Nuggets will be better this season because of the return of Jamal Murray. They have to be better. You have to think that Minnesota will probably be better this season because it's another year of Anthony Edwards. You add Rudy Gobert, the roster, they worked hard to improve it this offseason. You have to think the Clippers will be better because now they have Kawhi Leonard back, and they have a team that has Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And then you look at teams like Utah. All right, well, they're not going to be competing for a playoff spot anymore. I think all of that kind of combined, as you look at the big picture of the West, I'm not being Debbie Downer here by saying it's going to be competitive if you're the Grizzlies. It is not a given that the Grizzlies are going to finish inside of the top six in the conference. Do I think they will? Probably. But I'm not willing to go quite as far as you. I think that the conference is going to be really competitive. We didn't even mention, the Pelicans are going to be better, and who knows if the Lakers will be competent.
Right, so you take out the Spurs, you take out the Jazz, I think, right? Like, let's just remove them from the playoff equation.
Right.
The Spurs and the Jazz. I say you put the Lakers in, and I think you could probably put the Blazers in. I'm saying like top 10 in the West. Like, let's just play it safe. I think remove the Jazz, remove the Spurs, put in the Lakers, and replace them with the Lakers and the Blazers. There's your 10 right there. You know, same as last year.
Hey, don't count those Sacramento Kings all the way.
I'm counting them out. Sorry. The Clippers are going to be better, like you said. The Pelicans are going to be better. The Timberwolves make the huge deal for Gobert. Yeah,
this is tough.
It's gonna be. It is gonna be tough.
This is gonna be a very close race out west. I don't think that there's a lot separating a lot of these teams either. Memphis pushed Golden State harder than any other team in the playoffs last year, and I think even Steve Kerr said that after the fact.
I think that the Grizzlies are definitely finishing ahead of the Timberwolves. I think they're going to be really good. I think the Timberwolves are still a playoff team, but I think that it's a little understated how much Patrick Beverley meant to just like their, you know, that team persona. Right. You know, you think you're losing a lot there. Now you replace it with a great defender in Rudy Gobert, but I don't know, on the perimeter, like, you know, it's That's a big loss for them, I think.
I think there are tiers to this, and obviously last year Memphis finished pretty far ahead of some of these other teams. Like, they finished 6 games up on the Denver Nuggets. They finished more than 12 games up against the Clippers. Both of those teams are going to be pretty good, though. I don't think that that gap is quite as big this year, given what those two teams have coming back.
And there's still
the West is interesting.
And there's still a lot of ifs surrounding the Clippers. Like, can Kawhi and Paul George play a full season together?
Certainly.
You know?
Like, but if they do...
If they do, then they're going to be good.
Then they're probably part of the top tier. The Suns, Grizzlies, Mavericks, Warriors tier. I think they'll be that good. Like, they have a very, very good roster when they're all healthy.
The John Wall addition's nice.
Yeah.
But again, we haven't seen him play in a long time either.
Right.
Yeah.
Their season will probably depend on injuries.
Yeah.
The West is going to be fascinating this year, and that's definitely one of the big storylines.
Number 4, will Ja Morant be all NBA?
This is the $231 million question. If you're Ja Morant, I think so. I mean, I don't know what else suggests otherwise. It's interesting to me that as I follow Ja's, like, his videos from his videographer and all that he's up to and just talk around him, I think it's a very positive sign for the Memphis Grizzlies that in years past, when Ja would go into these off seasons and he would come back and people would ask him if he improved his shot or, you know, what he focused on, he would always say, everything. I practice everything.
Right,
I do everything.
Right.
It was almost as if it was like almost offensive to ask about the shot. But in some of the recent interviews that he's done, specifically the one with Pivot and Ryan Clark, he's come out and said, I need to build a consistent jump shot so that I don't have to take the punishment at the rim as often because, you know, I need to be available to play. I can't be getting hurt. I've been hurt every year of my career so far. I need to be available to play, so I need to have a more consistent jumper. That doesn't just mean that he's aware about that, because Ja is smart, and he has definitely been aware about that since the day he walked into the league. To me, that suggests he's got real confidence in that shot coming into this season. To now be coming out and saying this, to me, it suggests he's been working on it and he's feeling good about it. I know Grizzlies assistant Blake Ahern, who was an amazing shooter during his professional career, he's present in some of these videos with Ja Morant working out in Texas or whatever, so I'm sure that is calculated to some degree. And Ja's not holding back on these expectations. Like, you have Uncle Phil saying MVP Ja, Finals MVP Ja, and Ja's saying, you know, quoting the future lyrics, you know, we're going to do a sweep. We're winning them both. I don't think that's crazy coming out of Ja's mouth, because Ja's one of the most confident guys in the NBA. I wouldn't expect anything else, but it's exciting. And I said it's the $231 million question because he signed a max contract worth $193 million. If he finishes all NBA, that number goes to $231 million, and he is very well aware of that number from what I know, and he is gunning for that $231 million.
Yep.
I think he gets there.
I'm going to say yes too. And then the fifth top storyline heading into training camp for the Grizzlies, who's going to emerge as another weapon for this team? And I think we don't include Zaire Williams, because I think people expect Zaire to take a step this upcoming season, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's not include him in this.
We're talking rookies and Santi.
Yeah.
And I'm putting myself out there, and I kind of did it on our podcast this week too. Like, I'm planting the Santi Aldama flag a little bit. I think we're going to see real Santi Aldama minutes.
Okay.
I think we're going to see the minutes.
Wow.
They have belief in him.
Yeah.
And I saw enough of him in summer league to suggest that if he can just make some threes and rebound well for the Grizzlies, and he's the guy that has the best size to do so among all those the rookie players that we've talked about, he just sets up too well assuming they don't make a trade or something before the start of the season, he just sets up too well to be the guy that fills in at power forward and plays real minutes for the Grizzlies. And if the Grizzlies are any good, I suspect that he'll play pretty well. I know people think, like, because of they like to go back to rookie year Santi Aldama, that he's like terrible or something because he missed a bunch of shots in his first summer league, but he wasn't all that bad last year. And the summer league numbers and what you can see in person this summer was pretty impressive. So I think we're going to get some real minutes from Santi Aldama. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. The thing that I would worry about with him, right, is the defense, that he's just these bigger body, you know, bigs are going to push him around. That's what I would worry about, right? But there's no question the skill is there. Like, we saw it. And so I could buy it. I could buy it. I think I'm going to plant my flag in the David Roddy camp. I think he's going to be a contributor this season for the Grizzlies. I think he's going to come in, you know, battle inside, get some rebounds, some putbacks. Like, I just think he's going to be a guy, like, kind of a fan favorite type guy that helps them in spots this year.
He's not going to
put up, like, you know, big numbers or anything like that. I just think he's a guy that's going to be able to help them in spots this year.
I can see him playing well. I'm not even talking from a basketball standpoint right now, because he's going to fit in so well with the rest of this team. Like, when you, from our experience in summer league with him, he is going to fit. His teammates are going to love him. He's funny. He's charismatic. There's a lot to like about David Roddy, and I think because he's going to be so respected and by his teammates, I could totally see that guy being successful.
Like, he's already a big dude. Like, he's not going to get scared of fighting inside for boards. Like, I think he's going to help them some this year.
You hoping for some Kenny Lofton?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that if he is getting, you know, maybe minutes here and there, right? If he's getting big minutes, then somebody got hurt, right? Like, that's or he's just, like, amazing, and the Grizzlies got a big steal, right? But I don't think we'll see him enough.
I hope we see him because he's so fun to watch. And that'll be enough to get me down to South Haven at least
once this year to go see
some Kenny Lofton. I'm pretty excited about that. All right, when we come back, we'll talk some college football. This is Drew Hill filling in for Gary Parrish on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios. We don't pray for disaster. We just pray we get called when there is one. At Service Master by Cornerstone. Now back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host is Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian.
We're back. Drew Hill filling in for Gary Parrish on 92.9 FM ESPN. I found a friend in studio, so I decided to just bring him in here and talk a little bit about college football. That is Jeffrey Wright, host of the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show every day from 2 to 4. Also, producer on Jeff Calkins' show in the morning as well. I say producer lightly.
Mm-hmm.
You are quite the contributor on that show as well.
Talking producer, I believe, is the official term. Business card says executive producer.
Whoa. Serious.
I'm an executive producer, too.
Yeah.
Whoa. I'm in the presence of two executive producers.
You got to throw that executive
in
there.
I don't know. I'm just glad to finally be talking on the airwaves. You know, I don't quite get enough. Memphis doesn't quite get enough of me. I'm sure they need a little bit more.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
No, happy to do it. No,
it's okay. So the big news of the day, Memphis football-wise, is Missouri.
Yeah.
There's no way they're playing that Missouri game. Missouri's trying to buy out of the game. They didn't put Memphis on the announced schedule. It does not sound like that game's going to get played, huh?
No, when Dave Matter of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch wrote it last night, he kind of couched it in a way, but I know Dave a little bit, and the way Dave wrote it, I was like, oh, that game is not happening. And so I think kind of the bigger picture for me is this going to be the first of many? And not even necessarily from the Memphis angle, but I think what we're going to start to see as – we know the SEC schedule is at least going to 9 games in 2025, but I think we're going to start seeing a whole lot more of these games get canceled because I think it's entirely possible that Texas and Oklahoma come to the Big 12 or come to the SEC before that. And with the 9-game schedule, they're just going to start canceling these games.
I'm going to have Arkansas coming up too, right?
Arkansas is still on the schedule. Also, Mississippi State, I think, still has two more. Now, the one thing that could be interesting about Arkansas and Mississippi State, both of those schools recruit Memphis and not just from the athletic perspective. Like, they get a lot of students from Memphis. And so maybe there's the possibility those games could stick. But I think you're going to start seeing this around the country where these types of games are just going to start getting canceled.
These types of games, there's also high-profile games that I think are going to go away. We saw the Bedlam game. Doesn't look like that's going to be played in the future, or they're just strong-arming each other at the moment.
Look at it this way. Texas and Texas A&M never got the schedule back after Texas A&M went to the SEC.
Yep.
And what you're going to start to see is when these schools have to go to the 9-game conference schedule, they're gonna want to schedule 3 wins. And the teams that are gonna be hurt the most by this are teams like Memphis, teams where, you know, maybe you should win the game, but they can beat you. And so these are the schools that are gonna really be hurt by this.
Florida State and Florida, does that keep getting played?
So that's interesting because they have never been conference affiliates. If you made me guess, I'd say yes on that one because there doesn't seem to be, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, oh, one school left the other. And I think there might also be some legislative reasons. Like, I think that game might have to be played, or I think there's something in the state about
it. Okay, so then we'll move here because this is a very different situation for these schools.
Sure.
South Carolina and Clemson.
So that one's fascinating because if South Carolina were smart, they should back out of it. Because if you're scheduling, if you're South Carolina, you should be scheduling to win. Like, your 3 non-cons should be 3 wins because of the league that you play in. But I think it's kind of the same thing. I think that game is so entrenched, and I think it's such a big part of South Carolina. I think there also could be legislative aspects there. That's what I think is going to be fascinating. Are we going to start seeing where these state governments start trying to mandate that these teams have to play?
Yeah, it's different to be Florida and to be South Carolina or Kentucky.
Right.
It's different to, and so I think you're going to see a lot of the rivalries drop off when this scheduling goes to number 9. I don't think that there's any doubt, but I think the big ones with the big name teams will maintain in a way. I guess maybe not the way you see Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, but I think a lot of the mid-tier, they're gone.
Well, I think there's also the other looming question of, okay, in 5 years, what leagues are these teams in? Are Clemson and Florida State, are they still in the ACC? Is there still an ACC? Those are candidates that are primed to go to the SEC. Is that the answer? I don't know. I think what you're going to see, though, more and more is, I don't know how the vote went. It was announced, I'm sure, as a unanimous vote for the SEC on the 9-game schedule. But if you made me guess, here were the teams that wanted the 8-game schedule still. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Kentucky,
Vanderbilt.
Vandy might be in that position where they may not care
checks.
They're just saying when does the check post? But I got to imagine South Carolina's in that group. You know what I mean? The mid to third tier SEC schools, I imagine, still wanted the 8-game schedule, but it was very obvious that just wasn't going to happen because ESPN was not about that. Like, ESPN, I think, is somewhat done with the play, they want more big name games and they want more inventory, and that's what they're saying they're paying for. But do I think at some point maybe Oklahoma and Oklahoma State would get going again? Maybe, but I mean, I think kind of like the bigger questions are, Washington State, is one of those teams going to go to a different league? Are they both going to stay? Like, I just think it's in such a, I think right now it's kind of still like a house of cards. I think the question of playing like those types of games is so far down their list, their priority list, if you will, that I don't even know if we're really going to see a lot of answers on that until I think we kind of figure out who's in what league.
I agree. I want to get into some of these games. Can we just call it like it is, though? This slate is just pretty mediocre this weekend as far as college football goes. There's nothing that catches my eye maybe besides a little Tennessee and Florida, I guess Clemson and Wake Forest. But all in all, it's not a fantastic college football.
See, like last week, it got screwed up because App State beat A&M. But it was obvious that they tried to have a headliner last week. And it was trying to be the Texas A&M Miami game, thinking both teams undefeated, you know, perhaps going to, you know, be a top five team. But it got screwed up. I can't even tell what was trying to be the headliner. Like it is kind of cool that Tennessee Florida feels like a big game again. You know, from my childhood, that was always kind of the kickoff of the SEC schedule because CBS always had the U.S. Open tennis. And so the reason why the SEC schedule on CBS wouldn't start till week three was they had to finish the U.S. Open tennis first. And so it was always Tennessee Florida. And it feels kind of big again. But, you know, you're starting to kind of like talk. Feels like you're having to talk yourself into games. But I guess maybe the flip side of it is, oftentimes in college football, we go into these weekends and we think, man, this card stinks. That's kind of when chaos happens. Like week two to me, going into that week, I thought that week kind of stunk. And then we started to see, you know, just chaos ensue.
I think the Vols are going to roll this weekend. I think the moment's going to be a little too big for Anthony Richardson. I watched most of that Kentucky-Florida game. I just, something tells me Tennessee's going to get a big win, and it's going to feel like Tennessee's year after when this game is all settled.
The case for Tennessee, in my opinion, is if you've watched Florida this year, the back end of their defense is horrific. Like, their secondary has been really bad. They even let South Florida throw it on them, and South Florida cannot throw the football very well. So if you're Tennessee, that's a good matchup. My only concern with Tennessee this week, A, I kind of think like you do. It feels like a Tennessee spot where they kind of have the big win and the big day. And oftentimes, like, I feel like when we're all in agreement on that, that's kind of where you can get burned. But from a football perspective, the other thing that would scare me a little bit, Tennessee, in terms of rushing the passer, has not been great. And part of the reason why I think Kentucky beat Florida was Kentucky was essentially able to say, you are not getting outside of the pocket. You're going to have to stand back there and throw and beat us. If you can do it, we'll tip our cap to you with Anthony Richardson. But so far, he couldn't do it. I'm not as certain that Tennessee can take that defensive game plan that Kentucky did. But I still keep coming back to, I don't think Florida can keep up with Tennessee.
It takes maybe two mistakes by Richardson, and this thing is over.
I mean, that's what we saw with the Kentucky game.
Yeah. And I think in that atmosphere, that place is going to be rocking this weekend. I think it's going to happen. I think Tennessee gets their big win.
I am a little – are you not a little concerned? Sometimes when Tennessee has the smells like 98 again, big game, big atmosphere, that place can get a little tight. That does concern me a little bit. But I think – I just think in general, I think Tennessee's better.
Yeah, Tennessee's a better team. Tennessee can beat anybody because of that offense. Okay.
Are we sure Florida's good?
Oh, I am not sold on Florida at all. I don't think Florida is good.
Like, let's say Cam Rising just throws the ball into the ground on the interception at the goal line against Florida. Let's say he throws that one in the ground. Like, they had moved it down there at will. If they score, are we really talking about this game like it's that close? I mean, I do. The biggest favorite Tennessee has been against Florida is 5 points, and they're now 11. Like, I'm kind of quietly thinking maybe Florida's not good.
No, I don't think that I can see why last week maybe it was a look ahead spot for them, but I'm with you.
I find it hard to believe they were able to get up for South Florida.
I want to go on to some of these other ones. Arkansas and Texas A&M. This game, I think, I hinted at this earlier this week, could be significant for Ole Miss in Ole Miss might have the best game of the weekend next weekend if Texas A&M is to beat Arkansas, because you've got Alabama going to Arkansas.
Takes the air out of that game.
That's like a perfect college game day. They haven't been to Arkansas in a while. If Texas A&M finds a way to beat them in Jerry World, you could have top 10 matchup between Kentucky and Ole Miss.
Well, the other thing, though, that's interesting to me about this game, if you remember this game last year, it was kind of the same thing. A&M was coming in with not a ton of momentum. Obviously, Haynes King got hurt against Colorado, and so they were breaking in Calzada. But it was kind of what we expected going in. Two physical teams that kind of played the stalemate type game, but Arkansas hit like three big plays. They had a big pass to Burks. They had a big run. Like, to me, Texas A&M, I don't think they're going to get blown out this year, but they're going to play a lot of these games where if they give up two or three explosive plays, do you have any confidence that their offense can keep up? And like, to me, like, this is almost, I don't really think this game's a whole lot different than it was last year.
It's very similar. Okay, how about USC and Oregon State? USC, less than a touch, well, 6.5 point favorite at Oregon State. Oregon State has been a sneaky team this year. Already
they
have
good kids,
wins,
by the way.
Yeah, they already have wins over Boise State and Fresno State. Fresno State is solid. What do you think about that one? It's in Corvallis.
So USC, I feel like, always has the fear of dreams for them go to die in Corvallis. The thing about USC is we kind of joked about it in the summer, but it's ended up becoming true. USC is now Pac-12 Oklahoma, where their offense is legit. You know what I mean? Like, you watch their offense, and it's not like, oh, these teams stink they're playing. No, their offense is legitimately good, but they have lived off of turnovers defensively. Like, Stanford moved the ball up and down the field on them, but Stanford just kept turning it over, like, in the red zone. They even had, like, a goal line issue. Fresno even moved the ball on them, but they just kept turning it over. I'm of the opinion turnovers are somewhat luck. I don't think they're entirely luck-dependent, like a lot of analytics will tell you. I just kind of like Oregon State here because I think they can run on them.
All right, last one. Any chance Wisconsin keeps it close with Ohio State? I personally don't think so. This just feels like an Ohio State get right, although they did have the game against Arkansas State. But this feels like Ohio State puts its foot down and tells everybody that they're one of the four best teams in the country.
So I guess you can say there is a chance in this sense. I would imagine Wisconsin is capable of running a similar defensive game plan that Notre Dame ran on them, which is just basically have your safeties play 20 yards back, keep everything in front of you, and force Ohio State to try and run it down your throat. And if you're Wisconsin, they might be able to at least kind of – that's, I feel like they'd be more comfortable in that setting. But that's kind of playing to keep it close rather than playing to win. And what we've also seen with Ryan Day is oftentimes when they get that look, he refuses to run it. And he'll just keep throwing it, and everyone says thank you. But this Wisconsin doesn't feel like peak Wisconsin. You know what I mean? Like, there's some years you look at, like, that's a Wisconsin team. And typically the time to fade them is, okay, when they go up against the Ohio States, or they go up against, you know, when Penn State had it rolling with all the athletes. You don't want to rule it out just because Ohio State's been kind of weird. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we all think they're really good, but have you seen a moment where you can definitively go, they're awesome?
Not yet. I think you're going to get that this weekend.
Statement Saturday?
Yep.
Okay.
Statement Saturday from Ohio State. All right. Well, Jeffrey, I really appreciate it, man. Love the show. Listen often to Giannotto and Jeffrey.
You and my mom.
Thanks again.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Your mom. All right. When we come back, we'll do four stories at 4:44, and we do have a brand new Memphis Tigers basketball conference schedule. We'll talk about it next. Drew Hill filling in for Gary Parrish on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Are you looking for homeowners insurance, auto insurance, life insurance, business insurance? If so, this is Gary Parrish reminding you to get in touch with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. That's Elizabeth Rook Insurance, a second generation local agency that's been owned and operated since 1981. It is the home of the Erie Rate Lock. What's the Erie Rate Lock? Here's what it is. It's a way to lock in your auto rates indefinitely. Each year, you don't have an accident, your deductible is going to go down, drop by $100. Your first accident is forgiven. And let the record show that lower than normal rates are available right now, which is great because if recent events have taught us anything, it's that these days, every penny matters. Listen, you have a local doctor, you've got your local dentist, you got your local attorney, you need your own personal local insurance agent too. So please get in touch with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. It's got two offices in the Memphis area. One's in Lakeland on Kenneman Road. The other is on Highway 51 in Covington. That's Elizabeth Rook Insurance. 867-SAVE, 867-7283 on the web, rookinsurance.com.
Hey, hey, Jeff Allen. It's a great day to be happy. Happy in a new Kia from Gossett Kia South Mount Moriah. What you got going on?
Randy, we'd love to make you happy with the all-new 2023 Kia Seltos LX all-wheel drive. Just $257 per month for 36-month lease and only $29.99 due at signing. Or how about a 2023 Kia Sportage LX front-wheel drive, $287 per month for 36-month lease, $34.99 due at signing.
That's what I'm talking about, Jeff. You got me happy, happy.
And listen, Randy, if you don't see what you want, no problem. We'll order exactly the perfect ride for you, and you choose your own bells and whistles.
Plus, equipped with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain limited warranty.
So whether you live in Horn Lake, South Haven, Olive Branch, or Memphis, you'll be happy, happy at Gossett Kia Mount Moriah.
2680 Mount Moriah or KiaMountMoriah.com. 650 acquisition fee, $30,000 per year, 20 cents excess mileage, zero security deposit, Seltos P738-6423, MSRP 25325, Sportage P709-8842, MSRP 27955. Includes all rebates and incentives, must finance through Kia, excludes tax, title, and license with approved credit. See dealer for complete details. Offer valid through 10-1-2022, dealer stock only.
Tired of living with chronic joint pain from arthritis or injury? Stop with a steroid and pain meds and don't have surgery until you check out regenerative medicine at QC Kinetics.
These therapies can help the body have long-term relief of your pain.
Meet Dr. Justin Garzone, medical director at QC Kinetics.
We use your body's own healing properties, highly concentrate them, and then use that to restore and repair the damaged tissues in your joints.
This is a cutting-edge natural solution from local medical professionals.
We have a team of medical assistants, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and physicians that are trained specifically just to do regenerative medicine.
And Dr. Garzone speaks from personal experience. Before joining the QC Kinetics team, he was an actual patient.
I am now pain-free.
You too can get lasting relief from joint pain. Call QC Kinetics now for your free consultation.
Call QC Kinetics 901-445-1010. That's 901-445-1010. 901-445-1010.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Case Legal Media is responsible for the content of this ad.
Attention all military members or military families or contractors that spent time at Marine Base Camp Lejeune. If you or a family member lived, worked, or served at Camp Lejeune at any time from 1953 to 1987, you may be entitled to significant cash compensation. Call 800-817-0385 now to see if you qualify. That's right. Marines, their families, employees, contractors, and anyone who lived, worked, or served at Camp Lejeune may be entitled to significant cash compensation. Studies have found the water at Camp Lejeune was contaminated with toxic chemicals for decades, causing serious health conditions such as cancer, Parkinson's leukemia, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Congress has approved, and President Biden has signed a new law allowing anyone that spent time at the base to seek the justice they deserve. Billions have been set aside for victims of toxic water claims. If you or a loved one was at Camp Lejeune at any time through 1987 and developed a serious health condition, you or your family may be entitled to significant cash compensation. Hurry, time is limited. Call 800-817-0385. That's 800-817-0385. 800-817-0385.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. The Settlement Specialist LLC is responsible for the content of this ad.
Attention, this is an important message for anyone that spent time at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. If you or a family member lived, worked, or served at Camp Lejeune at any time between August 1st, 1953 and December 31st, 1987 and developed a serious health condition, you may be entitled to significant cash compensation. Call 800-305-1562 now to see if you qualify. That's right, studies have found the water at Camp Lejeune was contaminated with toxic chemicals for decades, causing serious health conditions such as bladder, breast, or kidney cancer, Parkinson's, leukemia, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Congress has approved and President Biden has signed a new law allowing anyone that spent time at the base affected by injury to seek the justice they deserve. Billions of dollars have been set aside by the government to compensate victims. If you or a family member lived, worked, or served at Camp Lejeune during this time and developed a serious health condition, you may be entitled to significant cash compensation, even if you were denied a disability claim in the past. Call 800-305-1562 now to see if you qualify. Hurry, time is limited. Call 800-305-1562. That's 800-305-1562. 800-305-1562.
Tonight, clear, warm, and pleasant, low of 74.
Brought to you by Ashley Furniture. Your neighborhood Ashley store has all the styles, selection, and value you'll need to invite fall in this season. Find furniture you'll love by shopping locally or visit ashley.com today.
You're the one who protects the flock, and that requires an eye for detail. Because when safety and well-being are on the line, it's the details that can save lives. Even when no one else is watching, you see everything. Grainger gets you, and we're here for you and all the ones who get it done with a wide range of safety products and solutions, plus board-certified safety consultants here to answer your questions. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios. We don't pray for disaster. We just pray we get called when there is one. At Service Master by Cornerstone. Now back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host is Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian.
Not the type to come around and try to play your friend. You the type to cut the
grass. We're back. Drew Hill filling in for Gary Parrish. Let's do four stories at 4:44.
Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
We already had a non-conference schedule for Memphis basketball, but today we got the AAC schedule. The first conference home game will be held December 29th on a Thursday night at home against South Florida. If you're into the big game, watch on January 19th is the home game against Wichita State. That'll be at 2 o'clock on, or sorry, at 6 p.m. on a Thursday on ESPN2. The home game against Cincinnati is February 26th on a Sunday at noon. That one will be on ESPN. And then my personal favorite, and it seems like we get this every year at this point, the biggest home game of the season you would anticipate.
Yeah.
Houston at home, the regular season finale, March 5th on CBS at 11 a.m. That'll be a huge one, really fun. You can check out the entire Memphis basketball conference schedule over at the Daily Memphian. I saw our new Tigers basketball writer already has that up. So, and all in all, a very good schedule for Memphis basketball. You've got Vanderbilt on the schedule. You've got the Thanksgiving tournament. Who knows who you could play there, but you're getting a game against Oklahoma or Nebraska. You could get a game against Florida State or Stanford as well. You've got Ole Miss at home, games against Auburn, at Alabama, Texas A&M at home. All in all, a pretty good schedule that Penny Hardaway has put together.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that just stands off looking at the whole thing put together with the conference schedule is you got to make some noise in the non-conference. Like, you got to
win games.
I mean, the conference, you know, we talked about in the break, it's not that good, right? Like, it might not be that good this year. You know, you mentioned you got the two Houston games. You play Cincinnati twice. We'll see about SMU, but I don't have a lot of expectations because they just lost Kendrick Davis.
Right.
Yeah, man, it's just looking at the conference schedule, there's just not a ton of opportunities for, like, big-time wins on that schedule. So you got to get work done early, and credit to Penny Hardaway. Like, he scheduled some really good games early on in the season.
Yeah, definitely some good games. And you feel better about it because in years past, maybe they weren't the best team early on in the schedule, but now you have a very experienced team coming into this year. Penny said he's looking forward to having the older team, not the younger team, when they're matching up against some of the big-name programs. And you are positioned well to be competitive right away, so the roster fits the schedule. But you're right, definitely need to get some of those non-conference games.
Story number two.
Robert Sarver is going to sell the Phoenix Suns and the Phoenix Mercury. This comes after he was found by the NBA in their investigation to have used inappropriate language, some racial language, as well as inappropriate language towards female employees of the Phoenix Suns. And this comes after a lot of the NBA players have been outspoken and said, it's not good enough that he's just suspended for an entire season. Like, we want him out. And so he released a statement today. I'm not going to read the entire thing, but essentially saying it's all because people aren't willing to give have forgiveness nowadays. It's about what you said in the past, and he'll be gone.
Yeah, and the thing is like, okay, he's basically claiming cancel culture, and that's why this is happening to me. But the thing is like, it's not just him. It's not just, which is egregious enough, him apparently going around the office saying the N-word casually, but he just had a bad work environment. Like, his employees didn't like him, and they thought he was a bad dude. So it makes sense.
Yeah, and I think he'll be all right.
He's going to be just fine.
He's a guy with enough money. He's going to sell the team, and like it's kind of hard to feel bad for him, to be honest. It's pretty hard to feel bad.
I did see a name thrown out there of someone who might be interested in buying the Phoenix Suns is Robert Iger, Bob Iger, the former Disney CEO and president. So that'd be interesting. He's a guy that's wanted to own a sports team.
Would that make you a Suns fan?
No.
As a huge Disney fan?
No, although credit to Bob Iger, like, he did a great job running that company, and the guy that's doing it now, Bob Chapek, he's definitely taken some bumps and criticisms along the way. So I think Bob Iger's a guy that's pretty well liked, in the higher ups in the world. I think that I think he's a guy that the NBA would probably like to have as an owner. Yeah,
and I would imagine that team, both of the